If you've got your Bibles, you can turn to the book of 1 Kings in the Old Testament. Our fall series has been called The Great Ones. We're simply looking at some key individuals and passages in Scripture and trying to learn some things for our lives. We're looking both Old and New Testament. Each month this fall, we've had a special sub-theme, if you will. September, we looked at four commands given by Jesus to all followers of His that guide them on what they're to do with their life. We call those the disciple-making commands. In the month of October, we looked at four key chapters and the four key divisions of the Bible. And this month, we're looking at the subject of choices. So in our study of choices, we're going to look at some people who have made some mistakes. None of these people are perfect. All of them had to make a choice. And based upon the choice they made, there were good results. Sometimes there were bad results. That would be the case for all of us. So the choices are explained if you look up here at the banners. Today we're looking at the life of Elijah in the Old Testament. We're going to be looking at 1 Kings 17 and 18 will be your reading for the week. But Elijah had to make a choice whether he would, what's the blue say? Stand up, whether he would stand up. That's a decision all of us make. And you may not be aware of it. You probably make that decision every day of your life. Next week, we're going to look at the life of Lot. I don't know that many of you ever heard have heard a sermon or much teaching on who Lot is. In the green, Lot had to what? He had to make a decision on whether he was going to look up. And if he did, what would be the object of his vision? The next week, we're going to look at a woman in the Bible. We'll just call her Ruby because we really don't know her name. But she had to make a decision in the orange about what? About getting up. What is she going to do with her life? And then the last person is a guy you'll probably know fairly well. His first name is Pontius. We go by that name. Not Pancho Villa, Pancho Gonzalez, Pontius. And Pontius had to make a decision whether he would what? Speak up. Again, decision most of us as Americans make every day of our life, whether we're going to speak up or we're going to be quiet. In America, we have a tremendous blessing. Now, most of us don't think of this as a blessing because we've always experienced this. This has always been true of your life since you have lived here in America. And that is simply that we get to choose our governmental leaders. Okay? Do you realize in a lot of countries in this world, they don't get that right? Those decisions are made for them. They don't even get to cast a ballot. If they do cast a ballot, we talk here in America, oh, can we trust the system, etc. You know, in some countries, there is no system to trust because it's very crooked. So we have a tremendous blessing. It's called the blessing of voting. Voting. If you're a citizen, you should vote. Now, out here in the kiosk, we have a Michigan voter guide. If you have not yet cast a ballot, we'd encourage you to pick one of these up and look at what a number of various organizations around the state have said, what they are saying their endorsement would be, and you can compare that to what you think. But at least it gives you some guidance. Most of us probably figured out if we're voting for grumpy or if we're voting for sleepy. But when you start getting to the other positions, who do you really vote for? And you just don't want to do a guess by golly. So you want to know what key organizations in the state, what they might endorse. So we encourage you to pick one of these things up. We get to make choices. Now, you don't always like the people who are voted in. Would you agree? Now, I don't know where what side of the equation you're on or whether you're just in the middle. I don't know that any of us totally like the politicians that are voted in. But at least we get to what? We get to vote. We do have a choice. And for that choice alone, we should be grateful. The amazing thing is this, is I can look back over the last 15 to 20 years. I have not always liked the presidential selection. But the amazing thing is this, I haven't burned a building down because of it. I go to work every day, and I hope you do too. That's what we need to do. We need to make our vote, make our choice, and then live with that. Now, somebody has said a country or a people gets the type of leader that they deserve. Have you ever heard that? Now, that doesn't mean you. That means the entirety of our population. Because whatever we vote for, folks, that's what we've got. And whether we like it or not, we are stuck with it for a period of time. So we get to make choices. Now, think about your life this morning. Didn't you make a choice this morning? At least one? Would you get up or stay in bed? That's a choice. I had to make that choice. Just because a person works somewhere doesn't mean you have to choose to go to work. We all make choices. What's the first thing you're going to do when you get out of bed? Bathroom, anyone? Don't you make choices? I don't know, some of you probably did not eat breakfast. I had to make decisions about breakfast this morning. Would I sit home and just have a cup of coffee like I normally do? Or would I be extravagant in my spending and go downtown to a restaurant? Well, then I have a choice of restaurants. And then restaurants have menus. So this morning I had what's called half a drover. It's a whole bunch of very nutritious hash browns with sausage gravy dumped on top and a ton of pepper and a lot of hot sauce. That was my breakfast. And I've had 3.5 cups of coffee this morning. Thank you. Somebody who has probably received a government grant, this person was at Cornell University, they did a big poll, and here's their estimate of American adults. So if you're not adult today, not looking at you at all, McDonald, if you're not an adult today, this doesn't apply to you. American adults make, on the average, of 35,000 decisions each day of their life. See, conscious or unconscious, you're making decisions. Some decisions, you just look at something, you didn't have deep thought about it, but you had to weigh the odds. Is it red or is it going to blue? Do I eat the candy bar or not? Etc. Okay, 35,000 decisions a day, and 226.7, I like the 0.7. Was that like an almost adult? 226.7 decisions just about your food. Now, some of you, it's far more than that. And what they found out is the more responsibility you have and the more adult you are, figure out what that means, the more decisions you have. Wouldn't you agree? That if you're in charge of a business, you probably are making more decisions than an employee. If you're a parent, do you make more decisions than your kids? We hope so. So think about your choices. And here's what I've said this numerous times. Choices have both short and long range effects for your life and the lives of others. We need to remember that. Every choice, not just voting, because voting, whoever you vote for, if that person gets elected, you have them for the next 4 or 6 years, right? You cannot just be careless with something like a ballot or how you drive a car. Everything we decide, sometimes they're split seconds, sometimes they're well thought out. It affects your life and the lives of others, sometimes just for a short duration, sometimes for decades. Think of marriage. Doesn't that affect your life? Each day we have little decisions. Most of us have little decisions. They add up. They're like raindrops. Raindrops create a little stream which becomes a mighty river at the end of it, or can. All of us have decisions. John Maxwell, famous Christian pastor and now well known as an author, both in the church world and in the business world. John Maxwell says this, and heed these words. Life is a matter of choices. Life is a matter of choices. And every choice you make makes you. That's kind of a brilliant statement. It's one of those little play on words. Life is a matter of choices. Every choice you, say it, make makes me. Do you realize that? I can go back through my life and look at both good and bad decisions. Some I've just flat forgotten. There's been some bad decisions in my life. How about yours? And they can affect you, your children, your grandchildren, your extended family, your coworkers, your school, neighborhood, etc. The first character in our series is Elijah. Elijah simply had a decision to make. His decision was, in the blue up, stand up. Now, you and I use that. If I were to say to you, stand up, Gary Nelson, really, he did it, yay, but he had a decision. Let's see, does he want to play Pastor Don's game or not? There you go. Gary, I didn't say wiggle it. So we think of stand up oftentimes in you getting from whatever position you're in to your feet, okay? But stand up is used in comedy too. True? Who's some of your favorite stand-up comedians? Around your table quickly. If you don't have one, that's cool. Do you have one? Say it to your group. I wanted to get a recording of my favorite comedian, but I decided not to do that. His name is Stephen Wright. Do you know who he is? How many like Stephen Wright? He may not be your favorite, but okay, you kind of know him. We also use the term stand up as a verb. It means to face something boldly. Stand up. You're under attack. You're in danger. To stand up and confront it boldly. An attack or criticism. It really means to hold your ground and not retreat. That's the way we're thinking about stand up today. Not as a comedy routine, but as somebody who had to get in the face of evil, in the face of wrong, and had a decision to make. So our key passage is 1 Kings 17:1. Are you there? All right. I think, yep, there should be a picture, a map on the screen. Is that up there? There we go. Take the verse off, please, if you would. Can you do that, or is it there? Okay. We're reading about a guy who is Jewish. Israel at this time in 1 Kings 17 was on either side of what we call the Jordan River. We see the Dead Sea in that little light green area going all the way. That's the Jordan River Valley. Israel was on the right and primarily on the left of this. The area right in the middle where Dead Sea is, about where that line is to the right, is called Gilead. So I want to point that out before we read this. Gilead was a large region, 2.5 tribes of Israel. When they crossed over, 2.5 tribes settled there. It's mountainous, it's rocky. In fact, the word Gilead means mountainous area or a rocky land. With that in mind, we're going to read. It says, now Elijah the Tishbite from Tishbe in Gilead. Tishbe is a city. So we're a Nashvillian, he was a Tish bite, okay? Had a little bite of Tish. He said to Ahab, who's Ahab? Ahab is the king of the whole land that is west of there, called the land of Israel, the northern kingdom. He said, as the Lord, the God of Israel lives, whom I serve, and there will... whom I serve, and there will be neither dew nor rain in the next few years except at my word. He crossed over, God had led him over, to confront an evil king, very powerful king, the king of 10 tribes. And we'll read it, you'll learn a little bit more here about this Ahab guy, but he was not a fun king. There's nothing fun about him or his wife. In fact, they were flat evil. And Elijah had to confront him. Notice it doesn't say Elijah and his boys. Elijah in the military. Elijah in the Supreme Court. Elijah with the local police. Just who? It's tough to stand up when you know you're the only... Say it. You're the only one. And a lot of people cower at that moment. A, you want to be liked. B, you're afraid. C, what will others think? list the reasons, the list of reasons goes on and on. But Elijah the Tishbite from Tishbe in Gilead said to Ahab, the verse tells us that Elijah is from a city on the eastern side of the Jordan River. Still an Israelite. He is going to talk to his king, not a king, his king. This is the land that Ahab ruled. Now, Ahab was from a rocky area. I pointed that out. He was sort of out of touch with things. You and I, if we think of the power places in the United States, Washington, D.C., New York, etc., for whatever reason, if you're from Nashville, Calamo, Vermontville, you're from Tishbe. You're coming from nowhere. You're a nobody. You're a citizen of the country, but who's going to listen to you? Think about it. Don't we all just rant and rave about something? Like, I've heard a lot of people here talking about the big game yesterday. It wasn't the Notre Dame game. That's the big game. I'm talking about the little game between two little state schools. And you've got an opinion about that. Do you think the coaches and players of that team that you're ranting about really gives a darn about your opinion? But isn't it amazing how we all have what? Opinions. Ahab sitting there in his throne, and you show up. Why would he listen to who? You ever think about that? At least in America, you get the vote. There was no voting here, folks. So who are you to rant and rave to a king? God told him to. When Elijah began his ministry, his methods, his mannerisms, and even his message came across as being a rube. Do you know what the term rube means? Not ruby, a rube. Country what? Hick. Country bumpkin. Okay? Uneducated. Where are you from? Nashville. Uh-huh. Kind of talk like you're from Nashville. You even wear flannel or a cut-off shirt, you know? I'd never use the name that those symbolize. But yeah, that's the way we would come across. Okay? So who is Elijah? Why should you and I give a rip? Why should we care? Because Elijah is somebody that, as your pastor, as your friend, I hope that you will become more like him and less like some of the other characters we're going to study. Surely I don't want you to be like Ahab. So here's three things about Elijah. Elijah, number one, was a common man. Common man. It says in the book of James, James, the brother of Jesus, wrote, as he was talking about the subject of prayer, he referenced this man called Elijah. He says Elijah was a human being in James 5:17. A human what? What are you? Human being. And then James said this, even as we are. He connected with Elijah. Elijah was just an average guy, a common Joe. He was a lot like any of us. Well, that makes me feel better. Do you realize there are very few kings in this world, very few presidents, very few superstars, and pick your field, but there's a whole lot of us. We sit in the stands. We pay money to watch them, don't we? Unless you're a cardboard cutout in the end zone. Some of you look like cardboard cutouts at times. Aren't you glad you're a common person? We have more people to relate to and with than a president, than a superstar, or a celebrity. You're either looking up at them or looking down at them. But we are the common people. That's who Elijah was. 4 years ago, we did a study. Do you remember that study? Elijah, a man just like us. 4 years ago, the year 2016. We learned a lot about him because we spent some time on his life. He spoke primarily, that's the way he looked, kind of a rough looking dude. He spoke primarily to the northern kingdom, or the northern kingdom as we know, Israel. Southern kingdom was Judah, 10 tribes in the northern kingdom. He had a big ministry, had a lot of people to speak to. And it was in the late 9th century B.C. So we're 2000 A.D., that's about 850 years back. So about 2,850 years ago is Elijah. Okay? Now, I know a typical person. Well, why do we care about dead people? Because they're still being talked about. They did something significant that they're worthy of. Who the heck's going to remember you 50 years from now? What have you done with your life that matters? Well, Elijah did something because we're still talking about him and he's recorded in the Bible. So there's sometimes we need to just learn some lessons from those that have gone before us. Here's an important truth. Write some of this down because this should catch your thinking. From his life, we learn that God can take a nobody from nowhere. A nobody from where? Nowhere. God is able to call anybody and make somebody out of them. You catch all that? God can take a nobody from nowhere. He's able to call anybody to be somebody. When you go home, look in the mirror. Look at your reflection, because God can use you. Better thing is this, he wants to use you. But God's always got some conditions. He was a common man. What allows God to use our life is our obedience to him. Remember last week we talked about faith? Faith is simply obeying God and whatever God has said. So God can use you. He wants to use you. In fact, the better part is this. He created you so he could use you. And all you have to do is say, okay, I sign up. Sometimes I wonder when God looks at us, what does he really see? Does he see somebody doing this? You ever see a little kid do that? I just walked down through the children's ministry, talked to some of the teachers, talked with some of the kids. Hi, how you doing? What's your name? Blah, 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 blah. Give me five. Walk up to another child. What's your name? When God looks at you, what does he see? What does he see? Because even little children make choices to talk and be civil or grunt and growl and hide. Even children make choices. When God looks at you, what does he see? Anyone? Only you know, because I don't follow you into your bathroom to look in the mirror. When you look in the mirror, you have to understand this. God is able to take a nobody from he can take anybody and make a. So what does he get with you? The little kid who grunts and groans, it's all about me and I'm not sharing my life, my possessions, my time with anybody. Or God sees you going, hey, here I am. I'll respond to you. God is simply looking for people who wholeheartedly, passionately desire to serve him. Do you realize God does not need your ability? You've probably heard this, but some of you need to hear it again. God doesn't need our ability, including mine. He just needs your what? Availability. So again, when God looks at you, what does he see? Does he see the hands up? You know, little kids that really want to be chosen to be on the team, they've got both hands up so they can be seen and heard. You either got them both up or you got them both around you, protecting you from anyone else getting into your life. Again, what does God see? What does God hear? What does God get from you and I? He was a common person. Elijah has nothing on you at all. He's from Vermontville, Calumet, Nashville. Wouldn't even go to Hastings or Charlotte. Those are the big cities. Coates Grove, Mullican, Sunfield. That's where Elijah would be from. Secondly, Elijah was a courageous man. Notice in verse 1, now Elijah said to Ahab, Elijah's name means Yahweh is my God. Say that. Yahweh is my God. That's what the name Elijah means. He is viewed by the Jewish people to this day as the second greatest prophet they've ever had. Second greatest. We could do a little guessing game here and make a choice. But the correct answer would be Moses is number one. Number two is Elijah. The Jewish people held a common person in high esteem. The king of Israel during this time is a guy named Ahab. If you go back just a few verses and you start in 1 Kings 16, 29 through 33, you learn that Ahab was the most wicked king that ever took the throne. He's a bad man. Okay? He's not just morally corrupt. He's corrupt in every sense of the word, but he's a mean person also. No, I love the words. Now Elijah texted a message to the king in a faraway city. Elijah stood on a mountaintop and gave semaphore or smoke signals. No, he walked right in. Hey! Got a message from God. You gotta love people like that, don't you? Ahab was a mean what? Man. Pick your word. Mean, cruel, vicious. He was a Boy Scout. Can we still use the word Boy Scout in our country? They have all this negative connotation. Where's Tim Reed when I need him? He was a Boy Scout. He was a choir boy, an altar boy compared to his wife. Behind every mean man, there's a what? A meaner what? Woman. It's okay to say that in church. Because you can ask forgiveness before you leave. You won't get a beating. All right? Her name is Jezebel. Now think about this. How many people do you personally know that are named Ahab? It's not one of those names that, it's like Adolf. You know many children in America named Adolf? Or last name, middle name Stalin? No. How many girls walk around proudly with the name Jezebel? There's been numerous movies and books about Jezebel. Most of them, she's demon-possessed. Jezebel was from a group of people called the Sidonians. We know that as modern-day Lebanon. They were very ardent and very passionate in their worship of their god called Baal. You ever hear that name? B-A hyphen or apostrophe A-L, Baal. Say Baal. Kind of like saying, remember that sermon? All right. Baal is the god of fertility. A lot of they had big gods, little gods, fat gods, skinny gods, mean gods, funny gods. Baal was the ultimate god in the Canaanite people. She introduced her husband to Baal. Baal and her began to promote Baal worship to all the Jewish people who worship Jehovah, the one true God. They wanted all their people to worship Baal. What kind of God is Baal? Baal is the fertility god. In worship to Baal, you sacrificed pigs. If you're a Jewish person, what does that mean to you? The word despicable should roll through your brain here. You just didn't do that. Pigs were an anthem to them. But they honored pigs. They sacrificed pigs. They worshiped pigs. You know, ain't pig lovers, not pig raisers. Pig worshipers, anyone? That would be just a bit odd, don't you think? But pigs were only one of the practices. They practice child sacrifice. Let that just roll around for a moment. They would sacrifice their children on an altar. Either slit them open, and let their blood and screams go everywhere, or they would take a metal casting of their gods like this, stoke it red hot, because the backside would be open, they'd stuff it full of wood, heat it till it was red or white hot, and parents would stand in line to walk up and put their child, their living child, into the arms of this God. That's Baal worship. Baal worship included, I'm just picking some of the thing, worship, slaughter of pigs, blood everywhere. Sacrifice of your own human child. And then because you want this God Baal to bless you and give you prosperity, help your crops to grow, help your rivers to flow so that you can go to the market, you would come to church and they would have both female and male prostitutes. And that was the form of your worship. You would come and have any kind of sex that you want with them, maybe animals, so that Baal would get all excited and he would send forth rain and his blessing upon your crop. Now you tell me, do you want to go to church there? That's who Ahab and Jezebel honored. That's who they promoted. They had little pictures and banners about Baal. And here comes Ahab. He's just like you. You going to walk in there and get in his face? Are you? Not many of you. Hey! Got a message for you from God. Don't you just love somebody that's got the guts, the gumption, to do something about evil? When you read 1 Kings 17 and 18, you have to read both of those, because then Elijah gets into a battle with the prophets of Baal. And we kind of all know about that. If you think of the map here, all of this land here is Gilead. Okay? All of this is Gilead. This is where Ahab had his capital, Samaria. We know that Elijah had a battle on Mount what? I love our Bible students here. Mount Carmel or Carmel with the prophets of Baal. That's 1 Kings 17 and 18. So they have a battle, but there's no battle. There's no confrontation of evil. There's no change in culture. No change in people's lives until somebody, what's the blue thing say? Until somebody's willing to what? Look at our nation. Does not our nation sacrifice children to the gods of pleasure? It's called abortion, folks. And whether you pick low number, 400,000, or a big number like 800,000, these people didn't sacrifice that many children in a year, and we do that year after year after year, so people can have peace and they can have prosperity and they can have pleasure. You don't change a culture by whining about it. You change a culture by being willing to. And in America, we have a right. It's called the right to vote. You can change your culture. But to just whine about it and do nothing, nothing changes. And if we do nothing, we're now complicit with the evil. Do you understand that? God has always held nations accountable for their sin, including the good people in those nations who were obliterated. If the evil rule, the righteous suffer. It's a matter of history. America's headed down that same path, and we have been. It's not like we've started. We've been on this path. We as American citizens have the right to stand up, to voice our opinion, to stand up and vote, to stand up and say something is wrong, This is what God says. Just don't tell me your opinion. Tell me what God says. And we can do that without casting judgment on another person. We just need to say, this is what God says. If they choose to violate God's word, that's on them. If we refuse to stand up, it's on us. Here's a point that we need to remember. Courage has a cost, and courage has consequences, right? You're in a foxhole, 10 of you, grenade comes in, you jump on it. Courage has a cost. It could cost you your... It also has consequences. Some of those are good consequences because 9 people might be free to live, true? But compromise also has cost and also has consequences. To do nothing, to say nothing, to act as though we all live in a cartoon world has costs and has consequences. So you've got to ask yourself, if you look at the blue thing, what will it take for you, not the person next to you, not your pastor, not your boss, not your spouse, but you to what? What will it take for you to do so? To raise your voice, to get you involved, to confront. And folks, there's so many evils in our culture. Would you agree? It's not just a one thing. We need to stand up. And as long as we still have the choice to do so, look in the mirror and ask yourself, what will it take for me to say, God, use me? Third thing about Elijah is this. Not only was he first a what? Common man. Number two, a courageous person. Here's the third. Elijah was a committed man. Look at verse 1. As the Lord, the God of Israel lives, whom I serve. Do you catch that? He's stating a fact. The Lord, the God of Israel, what? Lives. And he says, whom I serve. If you have the King James Version, some of you do, it literally says, whom I serve are for whom I stand. That's the idea of standing up. Elijah simply said this, here's evil. Here's God. God's a holy, righteous God. It's time somebody what? Stood up. And God used him. Elijah here gives evidence of his faith. Notice, as the God of Israel, what? In your notes, what? Lives. That's a statement of faith. He believes in the God of Israel. Go back to last week's message, Hebrews 11, about the subject of faith. Taking God at his word. So when I say Elijah was a committed man, he was committed in that he believed that God was alive. Notice Elijah gave evidence of his relationship. He says, whom I? You got to look in the mirror and say, do I have a right relationship with God? Have I asked Jesus to be my Savior? Have I turned, repented from my sin? Am I trusting Him and Him alone, not my own works, not my own goodness, trusting Him and Him alone to take me to heaven when I die? If so, you have a relationship with God. He was a committed man. He gives evidence of his loyalty because he says, whom I what? Serve. Or for whom I stand. Evidence of loyalty is always seen, not in words, in action. In action. He's standing in the presence of the king. Now, doesn't say whether he's scared or not. You can stand up for what's right and be terrified to do so. Can't you? Yeah. There's nothing wrong with having a little bit of fear, as long as your fear is for the right reason. It would take guts, I'm telling you, to be Elijah in the face of this Baal-worshipping king whose wife is right behind him, who's looking at Elijah doing one of these things. It takes guts to do that. Having guts doesn't mean you're afraid. It just means I'm willing to suffer the cost and the consequences to do the right thing at the right time for the right reason. It's obvious that Elijah had a relationship with the Lord, had cultivated a relationship with the Lord prior to that moment. It's a lot like we're in a very sports-conscious culture, and this community is very sports-conscious. Do you understand the difference between practice time and game time? Yes or no? They're not the same, folks. The purpose of practice time is to get you ready for the game time. If you wait to game time, you're going to get your tail handed to you. Practice time is critical. There's a good thing about living in Nashville and Calamo and Vermontville and Mullican and Woodbury and all these other little towns. There's something good about that because we are somewhat secluded. True? You're not living, has anybody burnt down a building where you live protesting anything lately? There's some goodness about living in a small town. But living in a small town is not to isolate us, it's to prepare us. Practice time, so that when game time rolls around, we're ready to go. And this is the thing about Elijah. He had developed his relationship with the Lord to the point where when God wanted to use him, he wasn't tainted. He wasn't stained with all the crud that was going on the other side of the river. He knew about it, but it hadn't affected him. He hadn't endorsed it. He hadn't bought into it, hook, line, and sinker. Here at this church, we give you tremendous opportunities for practice time. Do you realize that? You have opportunities that you'd go to 1,000 churches and never have opportunities like this. Something called personal mentoring. Something called Grace University classes. Something that is called home groups. Opportunities to be involved with various ministries without jumping through hoops. Just have a willingness to serve. You see, that's all practice time to get you ready as a Christian for what? Game time. And game time may be sharing your faith with coworkers or neighbors or extended family. And so many of you have been doing that. Can I use the word pleased as punch without dating myself? That's a phrase that Skip would understand. Okay? I am happy by how many of you are attempting to share your faith. You see, that's the result of practice time. I've got about 10 people in a class right now, frontline, that are learning to write out their personal testimonies so they can share that. You see, when you go and you learn and you get mentored so that you can mentor somebody else, that's practice time so that when somebody comes to faith, you can be their spiritual nurturer, their spiritual parent. Many, many of you are involved in all of those practice times that we're having. If you're not, I encourage you to do so. I love meeting with Keith Carpenter. Okay, Keith is really trying to have the Lord use him in his job, in his profession, where he's at. And so he comes, we meet together whenever our schedules can connect so he can be mentored so that he can go home, number one, try to invest some of this into his family, but number two, be a representative of the Lord in the place where God has placed him. But you can't do that, you won't do that if you're not being mentored, if you're not going through a home group, if you're not involved in a Grace U class, because you won't have the knowledge. You'll be timid, you'll compromise, you won't stand up and be committed. This is practice time, folks. I hope that you'll, if you're not involved, you'll get involved in one of those. What have we talked about? A guy by the name of? We've learned three things. Number one, what kind of man was he? Common. He's just like you. And when God called him, he had to raise his hand. Just like you. He had to cross a river of decision. Say it. Just like you. He had to get in the face of evil. Just like you. But you know what? 2,850 years later, we're still talking about him. Why? Because he was so amazing? No. Because he what? Raised his hand. Number two, not only was he a common man, he was a? Yeah, courage is, you're not born with courage. Courage is just a matter of your convictions. To do the right thing at the right time in the right way for the right reason. That's all courage is. But you won't do that if all you've done is compromise up to the moment of when God wants to use you. You won't do it. So to be courageous, you have to go through some practice and get ready. Lastly, He was a committed person. He worked on his own faith. He didn't rely upon his spouse's faith or the pastor's faith. He made sure he was who God wanted him to be, and in your case, who you are, male or female. He was sent as a representative to stand up, see the word in the blue, to what? Stand up to wickedness. Now, I don't know who God's going to use you in what area, what person. He may not ask you to confront a king. He may ask you just to vote God's heart. I don't know. But if we don't do what God's asked us to do, wickedness will always rule. He was sent to warn people that God's judgment was coming. When you and I witness to a loved one or a family member, friend, we're witnessing of God's coming judgment. The decision is theirs. He was sent as a role model. 2,800 years later, we're still talking about him. Was he perfect? Nope. He's a guy with his hand up. I like that guy. He was sent to demonstrate fearlessness. Folks, in our lifetime, some of you younger people, you have no idea because it's been written out of our history books, folks, or not included at all. You have no idea of the evils of communism, Marxism, and socialism in this world. You have no idea. Some of the younger people don't. Those that are older remember all the devastation, the tens of millions of lives that were sacrificed on those pagan gods, for those pagan gods on their own altars. We have to be fearless. We have no one to blame but who? Ourselves. When you read 1 Kings 17 and 18, you see that he stirred up a hornet's nest. I love getting people agitated. Evie, did I agitate you this morning? Oh, I love doing that. It just makes my world spin. Sorry. He stirred it up. You read 1 Kings 17 and 18. Watch all blank break loose. But when we stand up for God, God stands up for us. That's when we experience His power. That's when we experience God's miraculous nature and character on our behalf. Here's a quote that some of you have heard, some have not. Regardless, we should think about this often. I think this should be in our notes online. Thoughts become choices. Think of your thought, whatever you think. You think about it long enough, you either do it or you don't. That's called a choice. Thoughts, point to your head. Thoughts become what? Choices. Choices become actions. Actions become habits. Habits become character. Character becomes your destiny. You ever hear that? It all begins with your thoughts because they form your choices. And your choices then become your actions. Actions become habits. Habits develop who you are. And that ultimately determines the type of destiny you have. Would you agree? A lot of truth in those words. I like Elijah. He's a man just like who? Us. Don't just say you, point at me. He's a guy just like us. And if God can use him, he can use us. I don't know where he's going to use us. That's the fun of it all. But standing up for something is always better than having somebody stand on you. Do you get that? Always better. And if we don't learn to stand up for our American rights and who we are as Christian, and we're talking about the character of God and His Son Jesus, if we don't stand up, somebody's going to take their foot right on your throat, then try to get up. History repeats itself. Father, for our people here today, we want to learn from Elijah. Great guy, ordinary guy, bit of an attitude in this guy. But he stood up. He was willing to raise his hand, both hands, jump around so that you would choose him. And you did, and you used him. May there be men and women, teenagers here, who care enough about our country, care enough about you, care enough about our family and our friends that we will stand up for you. We ask this in your name. Amen. Would you stand up?